Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I am your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer at HowStuffWorks, and I love all things tech. And today, we're going to continue our discussion about companies and services that launched after Tech Stuff became a podcast, and just kind of get perspective on what has happened since we started this show 10 years ago. If you haven't heard part one of this series, you should probably do that, because we're going to start right back up where we left off. And away we go. Another thing that is younger than Tech Stuff is Kickstarter. And boy, this is a big one. Kickstarter launched in 2009. It was co-founded by Yancey Strickler, Perry Chen, and Charles Adler, and the concept behind it is pretty simple. Creators pitch a project and set a financial goal. And if it's picked by Kickstarter, if it meets the requirements that Kickstarter sets and doesn't violate any rules, it can then go up on the page. And you choose a fundraising campaign duration. Typically a month is very common. They then invite people to come and contribute money to this campaign for whatever it might be. And often it's in return for promised deliverables should the campaign fund. Campaigns are an all or nothing affair on Kickstarter. So if the campaign funds, Kickstarter takes a percentage of the overall campaign, and the rest goes to the creator. If it does not fund, then people are not charged for their pledges. Ideally, the creator would use the money generated from their Kickstarter campaign to complete his or her project and then send the deliverables to the appropriate backers. That's not always how it works, unfortunately, and there's no shortage of Kickstarter campaigns that funded successfully but failed to deliver a product. Now, someday I'm going to have to do a roundup of some of the more notable failures in the tech sector under Kickstarter, whether they were true failures or hoaxes, because I've backed a couple of them, and I'm still a little salty about it. On a similar note, there's Patreon, and that's another way creators can fund their work. This is an ongoing means of funding work, as opposed to an all-or-nothing campaign. It involves rewarding backers or patrons with various rewards. Backers select an amount of money they wish to contribute every month to the creator, and creators can make tiers of rewards for different levels of monthly contributions. So you could say for $1 a month, you will get access to this exclusive content that no one else has access to. For $5 a month, I will make content for you. For $10, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Patreon is used by people who continue to make something, typically. So it tends to be ongoing projects as opposed to a one-and-done affair. So it might be a podcast, it might be artwork, it might be a cosplay, it might be photography. It could be any sort of creative endeavor, really. In January 2009, MakerBot launched. Bray Pettis, Zach Hoken-Smith, and Adam Meyer were the co-founders of MakerBot back in New York City. And it was a company aimed at bringing 3D desktop printing to consumers. So 3D printers had been around for a bit already, and additive manufacturing had proved its usefulness in the industrial world several times over. But very few folks in the consumer world had very much experience or even knowledge of 3D printers back in 2009. MakerBot founders wanted to change that. In 2013, Stratasys Incorporated acquired MakerBot in a stock deal worth $604 million, another princely sum. So, wow. Now, in recent years, the company has had to weather some pretty difficult times, including layoffs, the departure of the founders of the company, and backlash from the maker community that had loyally supported this company in its earlier years. And I'll have to do a full episode on MakerBot someday. In 2010, Sphero was under development, and it was first shown off at CES 2011. I was actually there that year. I got to see it. I even got to drive one of the little things. It was pretty cool. The original Sphero ball robot is ball-shaped, has some electronics inside it, including a little motor that allows the ball to roll around in a controlled way. And you would send commands to Sphero through an app on a smartphone. It would turn your smartphone into a controller. Sphero's designs got the attention of Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, who saw the potential to do a licensing deal in which Sphero would make a remote-controlled version of a little robot that would feature in an upcoming Star Wars movie. And that robot was, of course, BB-8. And the Sphero BB-8 is absolutely adorable. Two of us here at the office, at least two of us, have one of those. Holly Fry would be one, and I'm the other. The Verge and Polygon are both younger than Tech Stuff. These are two related websites. They're owned by a company called Vox Media. And The Verge covers tech news, and Polygon covers video game industry and pop culture news. Joshua Topolsky was the founding editor-in-chief of The Verge, a job these days held by Nilay Patel, who is a really fascinating person, too. Topolsky left his previous position as editor-in-chief of Engadget after Engadget's parent company, AOL, released a document that stressed profitability metrics over other concerns. And he just felt that the integrity of reporting under AOL was in dire jeopardy. So he and several of his former Engadget coworkers left to go try and do something else. And ultimately, they founded The Verge, which launched in November 2011. Polygon grew out of The Verge and launched in October 2012 with a primary focus on video games, though in recent years the site has expanded to cover lots of areas of pop culture. And two other companies that are actually younger than Tech Stuff are Uber and Lyft. Both of these car hailing services launched after Tech Stuff did. Uber launched in 2009, Lyft in 2012. And I've covered Uber and Tech Stuff, but haven't done the same for Lyft yet. But these car hailing services, which sometimes are referred to as ride sharing services, but longtime listeners know I have a problem with that particular way of describing them, they have been incredibly disruptive businesses. They also both have a reputation for not being too terribly concerned with playing by the rule book, with Uber in particular gaining a reputation for a somewhat cavalier business practice attitude, not to mention a corporate culture that until recently sounded pretty toxic. And then we have one last one I want to talk about before we go to break, and that is Soylent, which really isn't a tech company, but a lot of folks in the tech sphere kind of glommed onto it when it launched in 2013. It was originally sold as a powder, and now you can find it in a few different forms, including liquid bottled forms, and it's a meal replacement product, and cleverly called, named after the fictional Soylent that appears in a short story, but is mostly known from its appearance in the movie Soylent Green, where we find out it's made from people. Soylent Green is, anyway. The other versions of Soylent were not. But I think most people think of Soylent as it's made of people. The company has backed off the messaging that you could have Soylent for every single meal of the day and get rid of quote-unquote real food and still maintain a healthy lifestyle. They've kind of retreated on that a little bit, but it's supposed to contain everything you need to keep on trucking. And the fact was, it is a very convenient and fast way to get some calories and maintain the basic nutrients you need. And people who are working ridiculous hours in tech companies started using the stuff like crazy because it was convenient. As for me, in August of 2016, I decided to experiment by only having Soylent for breakfast and lunch for a month. And it was the beginning of my weight loss journey. And while I no longer regularly drink Soylent, I do still have the occasional bottle when I need something convenient and fast. Now, that's all these companies and services that have launched since TechStuff. And of course, there are tons more. I just grabbed a selection that I thought were interesting. We're going to go into a break. And when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about some companies that launched after TechStuff but aren't around anymore. But first, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Okay, so let's talk about some stuff that launched after tech stuff and now don't exist no more. Go boom. First, we're going to start with Vine. And I have to do a full episode on Vine at some point because that story is also really interesting. But in short, the summarized Cliff's Notes version, I don't even know if Cliff's Notes still exist. Do Cliff's Notes still exist? It used to summarize stuff. Anyway, Vine was created in 2012 by Rus Yusupov, Dom Hoffman, and Colin Kroll. And the app started out as a program that would let people cut videos together using a mobile device so you could edit together a video. And it wasn't terribly stable, and it had no time limit attached to the videos. You could make very long videos, but that meant the videos were very difficult to share because the file sizes were so large. It was difficult to send it to someone else to watch. That's when the co-founders figured that if they created a time limit, if they made sure that the videos could only be a few seconds long, they could make it a shareable experience because the file sizes would not be too large to send over cellular networks or Wi-Fi. Sort of the video version of what Twitter was, where you could record short social videos for your friends. And Twitter loved that idea. They presented it to Twitter, and Twitter said, this is a great idea, we like it a lot. And they purchased Vine, reportedly for around $30 million. And Vine had not yet launched yet. And just as Twitter had started out as one thing in the minds of its creators, and then turned into something else, if you're familiar with the story of Twitter, you know that they originally were thinking about a service where you could send out a text message to a group of friends, and that was really the only use case they were thinking of with Twitter, was just, I'm going to go do something, I want to let my friends know what I'm about to do, so I'm going to blast them all with this Twitter message. It turned out that Twitter turned into something much different, where you had celebrities, news outlets, brands, all these different entities that were blasting out information to the general public and creating a new means of communication. That was not Twitter's mission at the beginning. Same thing was true for Vine. They wanted to create a way for people to make very short, socially focused videos that could be easily shared. But people began to take that 6-second limitation as a challenge to create interesting, super short form video stories. But Vine didn't stick around. Instagram and Snapchat both took a lot of wind from Vine's sales. Instagram did it by creating longer form videos. And by longer form, I meant that at first they were 15 seconds long, then they ended up being a bit longer. Snapchat did it by making it easy to share videos with friends that would later, those videos would disappear, and it would keep it very social and timely. And so Twitter chose to shut down Vine in 2016. It is no longer a thing. Although you can still watch previously created Vine videos, you can't make new ones because the service doesn't exist anymore. Or how about Kuul? Kuul as in C-U-I-L. I remember doing an episode about this way back in the day. In fact, before it launched. Kuul launched in July 2008. Just a month after Tech Stuff went live. Maybe it was shortly after Kuul launched when we did our episode, but Kuul was a search engine that claimed to have the largest number of indexed web pages among all search engines. So in other words, they said, hey, if you want to find the information on any topic, trust us, we're going to have it because we've indexed more pages than anybody else. And it would present search results with longer entries about those specific results, as opposed to maybe the sentence or two you might get from Google, you would get longer ones. And also you would get thumbnail pictures of various sites that were supposed to be relevant to whatever the search results were. But things were rocky for Kuul from the start. 1 month after it launched, the head of the technology department, essentially the person in charge of the search technology, quit the company after getting into disagreements with the CEO about the company's direction. It made a bit of a splash when it debuted, but it didn't gain momentum. And by the fall of that year, by the fall of 2008, it had already dropped to nearly no traffic at all. The amount of traffic going to Kuul had gone to a tiny little trickle. The company continued along until September 2010, and then Kuul unceremoniously shut down, laid off all the employees who were told there would be no more checks, they would not be getting paid for their last few days of work, and the servers all went offline. This despite the company raising more than $30 million in venture capital over the course of its existence. Also, it gained a reputation for irrelevant search results, sometimes presenting very inappropriate images in response to search results, and other major problems. And like I said, I did an episode on Kuul back when it launched, but maybe a full story could be in order. I might revisit it, because it is, again, another interesting study in how tech can go wrong. Next, I want to talk about Pebble, and this one hurts. I was a fan of the idea of Pebble all the way back to when the Kickstarter campaign launched in the spring of 2012. The campaign was a wild success, and it raised more than $10 million. It made it the most successful Kickstarter campaign up to that point. And unlike lots of other tech crowdfunding campaigns, Pebble actually shipped their promised watches starting in January 2013. So, in case you aren't familiar with it, Pebble is sort of a semi-smart watch. It would connect via Bluetooth to a smartphone, and you could get notifications on it. You could run certain apps on it. You could change the face on it. It had a very ultra low power LCD screen that was monochromatic, so it had a really good battery life. It was waterproof, or at least water resistant. It was neat. It would vibrate whenever you would get a notification, so you could actually read things like Twitter messages or emails on your watch. And it was a kind of a low cost smartwatch, but Pebble wasn't able to make a profit. And in 2016, the company had to file for insolvency. Fitbit ended up acquiring most of Pebble, though not the actual hardware. Fitbit got the software and the assets, meaning the programmers and developers. Pebble as a company closed shop at the end of 2016. Another piece of hardware that doesn't exist anymore is Ouya, O-U-Y-A. It launched in 2013. This was originally a micro console running on the Android operating system, a gaming micro console, that is. It was crowdfunded and reached its goal in just 8 hours on Kickstarter. It finished the campaign more than 900% above its goal, with a final tally of more than $8.5 million. The games on the console were largely in that casual gaming category, and it could run a few other apps in addition to running games, but sales of the Ouya didn't do very well outside the initial crowdfunding campaign. Reviews of prototype builds were mixed, or some of them were mildly negative, but those reviews improved significantly once the retail version of the Ouya was ready to ship for customers. They said, oh, well, Ouya paid attention. They listened to the problems we had with this, and they addressed it, and the new build is much better. Even so, it never really caught on in the marketplace, and Ouya accrued debt it could not pay, it could not renegotiate, and eventually it was forced to sell off its assets to Razer Incorporated. The hardware was discontinued, and Razer put the employees of Ouya and the software assets to use elsewhere under its own umbrella, and Ouya was no more. Now, we have more to say about these companies and services in just a moment, but before we get to that, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Now, just before the ad break, I talked about Ouya. Now let's talk about OnLive, which was first discussed at the 2009 Game Developers Conference. Users would buy hardware, that would allow them to access games online, and they would pay a monthly service fee for the opportunity to play numerous games from an online library. So instead of buying a game, you would pay this monthly fee, and you would have access to a library of games, and it would stream to your machine, and then you could play in the cloud. This is very similar to what was pitched as the Phantom console back in the day, except this one really had intent behind it. People were really determined to make a working service and a working product. After a few months of its launch, the company announced it would move to a free service model, but you would have to pay to access specific games. So you no longer have to pay a monthly subscription fee to access it, but you would have to pay money to either rent a game, meaning you would have access to that game for a given amount of time, or I believe you could actually quote-unquote purchase a game, which just meant that you could access that game whenever you wanted from that point forward. But in August 2012, the company laid everybody off. Everyone got fired. The company sold all its assets off and then formed a new OnLive company. So essentially it was like a do-over. It was a Control-Alt-Reset, a Control-Alt-Delete, where you say, well, we had this company, we're getting rid of everybody, we're dissolving the company, we're forming the new company, and the Lauder partners, L-A-U-D-E-R, were the new owner of OnLive. That company continued on until 2015. Then Sony Entertainment swept in and bought up most of the company's assets, and OnLive service shut down in April 2015. So not a big success. And I remember talking about OnLive back in the day with Chris Spillett too, where we were both kind of skeptical about the prospects of a cloud-based video game company at that time. These days, I would actually think it'd be not that difficult to do. And in fact, Microsoft is doing this over on Xbox. You can pay to be part of a Microsoft service where at least the Microsoft games, you can have access to those month to month as long as your service subscription is active. So it does still kind of exist, although you are downloading at least part of those games to your Xbox console. So it's not exactly the same thing. But we're seeing some similar business practices that are in place today. Next, I'll chat about Yik Yak. This one hits a little close to home because I once had to moderate a panel with the Yik Yak founders. That would be Tyler Droll and Brooks Buffington. And yes, those are their actual names. And that service launched in 2013 here in Atlanta. It was a location-based anonymous messaging service. So you would log into Yik Yak, and you could read messages written by other people that are in the same general location that you are in, same general region of your city or town. So as you moved around the city, the messages you could read would change because it was all proximity-based. So if you happen to be near a college campus, you could read the messages from that college campus because you were close enough to it. But as you moved across to the other parts of the city, you would see messages from other areas. Users could post about just about anything. And again, because it was anonymous, at least at first, you didn't really have a lot of accountability there, and that caused a lot of issues. It got a lot of criticism from people who said the platform enabled harassment and bullying. Yik Yak used geofencing techniques to create blackout zones around places like middle schools and high schools. So if you were an administrator of a high school, you could use that to black it out the service around your high school so that students wouldn't be able to use it while they were on campus. There were a lot of issues with students using this while in school and causing issues. And critics pointed at instances of mean-spirited pranks, destructive gossip, and hate speech on the platform. Yik Yak attempted to respond to these issues in a few different ways, including creating mandated handles so you no longer could be completely anonymous, but saw its user numbers decline, and eventually the company shut down the service in the spring of 2017. Then there's RDO, or RDIO, the online music streaming service. That one launched in 2010, very similar to other streaming services like Spotify or in some cases like Pandora. There were two main tiers of RDO service. There was a free tier that was ad supported. So you could listen to music and occasionally an ad would be inserted in between songs. And then there was a subscription ad-free tier that you could subscribe to. And so you'd pay a monthly fee and you'd be able to listen to music without ads. But the service failed to survive in a very crowded space and eventually had to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in 2015, selling off some of its assets to its former rival Pandora as a result. Then let's talk about Juicero. Juicero is one of those things that kind of makes me scratch my head. Sometimes venture capitalists irritate the heck out of me, and that's the case with Juicero. It was a Wi-Fi-enabled juicer that relied on a subscription service. You would subscribe and receive single-serving packets that had cut-up fruits or vegetables or both, and you would put this packet inside the juicer, which would squeeze the packet and produce a fresh glass of juice for you, which all in itself doesn't sound that bad, but there were other issues. So the company received more than $100 million in venture capital funding, I think $120 million since its founding in 2014. But in 2017, the company said it would suspend sales of the juicer and repurchase juicers that had been sold to customers up to that point while looking for a buyer for the company. The juice packets all had QR codes on them, and you were supposed to scan your juice packet QR code before you pressed it. And the company said this was to make sure that you never were getting juice from expired products. You would scan it and the juicer would say, oh, well, that was put in that packet just 3 days ago, so it's still good. You should be able to use it. Or, no, that's a month old. It's bad. It'll make you sick. Don't use it. That was what they were saying it was for. But other people said, no, this is really a method of digital rights management. In other words, it was a way to prevent you from using your Juicero from pressing any other juice packets made by anyone else. So it's kind of like the idea of a Keurig, the Keurig coffee makers that use those single canisters to make a single cup of coffee. Other manufacturers started making canisters that could work with Keurigs, and then Keurig wanted to change its design so that only its packets would work in its machines. And other people said, well, you can't do that. That's, you know, it's anti-competitive and it's a type of DRM that I'm not comfortable with. People were making the same claims about Juicero, although the company denied that was the purpose. And Bloomberg published a pretty damning report in 2017 that said you can get the same result as the Juicero if you just took the packet that would come when you subscribed and just squeezed the packet by hand and squeezed it into a glass. A venture capitalist named Ben Einstein took a Juicero and dismantled it and said it was incredibly sophisticated. In fact, it was too sophisticated. He said it was way too complicated, unnecessarily complicated, and that jacked up the price of the juicer, but did not provide additional value. And this was backed up by other reviewers of the same product. So, yeah, not the best showing of a brand new product. And also one of those where people said, why does this need to be a smart such and such, right? Why does it need to be a smart juicer? And people point at this and say, yeah, this is not a valid argument. I don't know that we need such a thing. The last example I want to give about a company that launched after TechStuff and no longer exists is Clout. Now, Clout was an app, an extension really, that was meant to measure a person's social influence or their reach using a Clout score. And a Clout score would link to many different social networks, primarily Twitter, but you could also link it to stuff like Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, etc. Clout launched in 2008 after TechStuff was live, and Clout scores were between 1 and 100. The higher your score, the more effective your social reach was said to be. I was always in the 80s, by the way. The average, I think, was somewhere in the 30s. But for a while, companies would offer perks to Clout members who had scores above a particular threshold, with the idea that the receiver of the perk would talk up his or her experience using the service. I heard about people who got like crazy deals on hotel rooms, things like that. And the whole expectation there was the provider of the service or the product would get a benefit from the person with a very high Clout score saying, hey, this company is the bomb diggity. You got to go and buy their stuff because it's amazing. And it would be like a marketing campaign. And when you think about it, marketing campaigns get very expensive. But if you can get effective word of mouth from somebody who's very influential and it just costs you the price of a product that you're already selling, that's a pretty efficient marketing campaign. So that was going on for a while. Eventually, Clout would get rid of the perks program because it received a lot of criticism. And there was questions about how effective the perks were that came from both users of Clout and from the providers themselves. And critics said that Clout was kind of a social evil, that it was leveraging social status anxiety. And it promoted bad online etiquette because people were just trying to find fast ways to jack that Clout score up higher and higher. And eventually, the service would end officially on May 25th, 2018. So just a short while before this podcast was recorded. So Clout is no more as of like a couple of weeks ago. And like I said, this is just a sample of some of the services and companies that have launched since tech stuff became a thing. It's funny to think that my show is older than a lot of these famous companies and services are and outlasted some of them. That's pretty amazing to me. And also, it's amazing to me that you guys have been supporting this show. And I love that. I deeply appreciate all you listeners out there, the ones who write to me, the ones who just listen to my show and look forward to the next one. All of you guys have been incredible. And thank you for supporting the show and for letting me do something I love to do, which is I love to learn. And then I love to talk about the stuff that I've learned. And you guys have made that possible. So thank you so much. Thank you for 10 years of tech stuff. I can't wait for the next 10. I'll be talking about robots, possibly two robots. I look forward to my robotic listeners. Anyway, for you humans out there, if you have any suggestions for future episodes of tech stuff, why not send me a message? It can be about a technology, a company, a person in tech. It could be a suggestion for someone I should interview or have on as a guest host. I look forward to hearing from you guys. The email address you can use is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, or you can drop me a line on Facebook or Twitter. The handle at both of those is techstuffhsw. And finally, make sure you follow us on Instagram. It is a great way to get a behind-the-scenes look at what's going on at TechStuff. And I really look forward to doing tons more episodes for you guys. And I'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.